So we will circle back to part of the first. You know, I'm just going to give people a chance to get here, because I know the traffic in every direction is just, I don't know what the heck they're doing, but it's insane. All right.
So y'all looked at the Constitution.
We'll do a few more minutes before we do the extra credit stuff to get more people a chance to get here. The Constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is divided into three parts. The first part is essentially the Bill of Rights, and that's what we're going to be discussing in a little bit. Second part lays out the government. Third part are all the amendments. For the next section, again, I just haven't finished it yet, but I am going to be giving you another extra credit assignment in which I'm going to want you to go through part of the second, and we're going to see if we can just figure, it's not going to be as lengthy as this first one. I just want you to grab the powers articulated to the different branches. But again, I'm just about done. I'll send it out via email later today or tomorrow. Part of the second, essentially, is what gives birth to the government of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. As it states, people inhabiting the territory formerly called the Province of Massachusetts Bay do hereby solemnly and mutually agree with each other to form themselves into a free, sovereign, and independent body politic or state for the name of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Again, this is a reflection of what took place that I mentioned toward the end of last class. We are the only state, potentially, I'm going to throw countries in as well, in human history, where ultimately we actually decided what we wanted. The people, the common man. That's one of the things that makes Massachusetts extraordinarily unique, different. Every freeman, whether you are rich or poor, had the ability to vote for a delegate who went to this convention, drafted the Constitution, which then kicked back to all of the towns, and every voter in every town went to town meeting and voted on every single article. And everyone approved of everything. There is no other example in human history where that occurred. 99% of governments were formed as a result of war. An army marches in, takes over, deposes the last government, and uses military force to establish themselves. Soviet Union, Communist China, Nazi Germany, etc., etc., etc. But we in Massachusetts, we made it. We the people made it. And what they did was implement an idea that started in Massachusetts. Separation of powers. Going all the way back to the revolt of 1634, when all of the power was held by the executive branch, the governor and the assistants, when they hid the charter and they kept it secret. And they said, we have the power to make all the rules. We have the power to appoint everybody. Even though that's not what the document said. Going back to that point in time, you took the powers of government, the power to make law, the power to enforce law, the power to adjudicate issues under the law, and put them into separate branches. That was retained
in our Constitution. And by the way, as you're going to see, they only gave certain limited powers to each branch. Because who wanted to live under a dictatorship? They did it when martial law was declared.
after the Massachusetts Government Act was passed by Parliament, when the governor had wielded all dictatorial powers, they didn't want that.
And by the way,
this frame that John Adams wrote is the model upon which the United States government is built. Our legislative branch retained the name whose origins date back to 1629, the General Court. Actually, in the Constitution, it refers to it the Great and General Court.
This was to be a body made up of elected delegates chosen by the people to make laws on their behalf. Bless you.
One of the big changes that came out after the Body of Liberties was passed in 1641, when they decided, you know, it would be a good idea to have two chambers, not just one. That was retained and implemented into this new system. But what John Adams named these chambers to be is one was the House of Representatives, and the other was to be the Senate.
Why did he give us two?
Well, simple. The House of Representatives was originally intended to represent the towns, individual towns. The Senate was supposed to represent the counties, so a collection of towns. The Senate was perceived to be the elder branch, the more significant branch. They heard more voices. So in the House of Representatives, the people would get their representatives, but you had the more mature opinions as well, on the regional level. Well, if in order to pass a law, it has to be passed in both chambers, what happens if one chamber doesn't like the law? The bill doesn't go to the governor's desk. To help shepherd you on the path to the next assignment, our legislature has four basic general powers.
What's the basic power of a legislature? I've already said it a couple of times. Make laws.
Why would you want, here you go, here's a good question, something to contemplate. Why would you want to have representatives of the people making laws? In a big chamber that had hundreds of members, why would you want to have them be the ones who make the laws? Wouldn't it be easier just to have one guy do it? Right, isn't it easier just to have one guy make all the decisions? Why have a couple of hundred?
I don't know, I guess if it's just one guy, kind of thinks like a dictatorship, mm-hmm. I guess I could call it.
Yeah.
Whereas, there's, a lot of people with different ideals, so we could come together for one.
Okay. Well, what about this? Different ideas. Do you think you and I see the world the same?
Probably not.
Why not?
I think there's a lot of factors, probably age and time.
Okay. Experience. Yeah. So, if one person has all the power, how are they going to make the laws?
Just on their experience.
based on their experience. But my experience is different than yours. So do you want me making laws that control your life? Oh, well, what happens if suddenly, in order for us to have a law, I have to discuss things with you? And we have to kind of agree. What do we have to do? We have to come to a common ground. And what happens if I add you in? What do you think is going to happen? So suddenly we have a compromise. We found middle ground. But is your experience the same as ours? Probably not. But now we're going to let you have a say as well. What's going to happen to our agreement? It's going to get a little broader, right? Try to touch upon the opinions of more people. Working as a group is not an easy thing to do. But the only way to be successful is working in a group. Is if you can achieve consensus, compromise. You got to give to get. So when John Adams wanted to make sure that it was the legislature, the general court that was making the laws, he wanted to ensure that it would force everyone's perspectives, everyone's interest to be heard before a decision was made.
So the first basic power of the general court is to make laws.
Second, everyone's favorite five-letter word, T-A-X-E-S. This goes back to the Magna Carta in English history. The power of the purse, the power to pass laws involving the collection of taxes, the power to spend that tax money was given to the representatives of the people. So that way, the representatives of the people could fund the government. But just like passing a law, it would force consensus. Because what happens if I don't want to pay any taxes? Because again, to use the motto I've used a couple of times, because I don't want to pay for the public schools. But you think the schools are important. But there's more of you than me. What ends up happening? Well, the majority can pass a law or a tax for the common good. And the majority can make a decision for the common good. It's good for most.
All right, power to pass laws, power to tax. Power to create government agencies or government offices.
Does Moore Healy, as governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, does she go around and inspect hospitals? Does she go around and inspect factories to check out the discharge that comes out of their facilities? Does she inspect highways and the bridges to make sure they're safe? Does she pull people over on the mass bike for speeding? No, all of those jobs are handled by government offices, agencies that were created to handle basic duties of government. Every single agency was created by law. A law was passed that created the agency, that defined its powers. And then tax money is applied to those agencies. So that way they can operate. By the way, that's one of the greatest problems that we have in Massachusetts. In the last 15 years, the Massachusetts budget has doubled. 15 years ago, the Massachusetts budget was $32 billion. This coming year, it's $64 billion. Where's all the money going? It's not going to the cities and towns, I can tell you that much. But if you read the Boston Globe, there are hundreds and hundreds of state employees that make well into six figures. Tax money is being pumped into the government itself. And is that helpful? I don't know. That's politics. That's a debate that people can have.
So one, pass laws. Two, deal with taxes. Three, create the government offices.
And last but not least, the fourth basic power, they can make the courts. They can make the courts. The Constitution creates the Supreme Judicial Court, the High Court, but everything else below it was created by law. Which means the legislature could cancel all of those other courts, but they can't cancel the SJC.
There has to be a Supreme Court in our state. Questions? So for those of you who came in after I started, I'm kind of procrastinating because, again, we have 10 people in the class and we have 6 years, so just giving people a chance to come in late before we do the extra credit assignment. All right.
Executive power. So this is the legislative branch. Executive power.
Obviously, I don't think this is too hard to understand. What's the job of the executive branch?
Legislative branch makes the laws. What's the job of the executive branch? Execute, enforce the laws. Yeah,
exactly.
Enact the laws.
Perfect. Pretty straightforward.
But here's the thing. Again, going back to that point I made earlier about the fear of dictatorship, the fear of putting all the power into the hands of one, what John Adams did was he took that executive power and he broke it up into different offices. And under the original Constitution, the mechanism of putting those executive officers in place was also divided. Checks and balances. You make it so the different executive officers have different loyalties. Because if everything was appointed by the governor, they would only be loyal to the governor. So John Adams cleverly mixed it up. The top two executives were elected by the people directly. The governor and lieutenant governor, the original unamended Constitution. They would be elected by the people. Directly. So every person had a right to vote specifically for them.
There was no electoral college.
Going back in history, he appreciated the importance of the Council of Assistants to kind of check and balance the executive authority. So John Adams wanted to retain that. And he created what technically is referred to the Executive Council, although today we call it the Governor's Council. These members were to be chosen from amongst the Senate by the General Court. Just like the way originally people became assistants. The original General Court back in Massachusetts Bay, colonial times. The General Court picked the assistants from out of themselves. The same thing, but the catch was, these eight people were senators. So they would go in and they would kind of serve as an advisory board to the governor. There would also be people picked by the legislature directly.
The Secretary of State, the Treasurer, the head of our military forces, called the Commissary General, plus notaries public, naval officers.
All of those positions were voted on by the General Court in a secret ballot. So the people had no say. And the governor would also get to appoint people as well, but just not as powerful as the ones that were picked by the legislature. So, for example, the attorney general, the sheriffs, the coroners, bless you, the registry of probate, a lot of the officers that we today vote for were originally chosen by the executive. But here's the catch. Check and balance. The governor could only appoint people if the executive council, who are the leading senators, agreed with those appointments. The whole idea, you spread out from where the executives came from, and then you will reduce the likelihood of absolute power falling into the hands of either one person or an oligarch. Because generally speaking, if you can hire somebody, what can you do? You also can fire them. So anyone that was appointed by the legislature could be removed by the legislature if they didn't do a good job. Anyone appointed by the governor could be removed by the governor if they weren't doing a good job. Questions? Okay. And then our third branch, we have a judicial branch. If you are found guilty of an act that the government, through legislation, says you cannot do, you don't go to the Tower of London and disappear. No. Instead, you go to the courts. Because what the courts are going to do is they're going to take what you are accused of doing and compare it to the law. Because obviously, if you broke the law, you should be punished. But what happens if the government has no proof? What happens if the government's making it up? Well, the most important aspect of the courts is they can find you not guilty. They can tell the government, government, you're wrong. I've already talked about this. Constitution creates our high court. And when we get to the judicial branch, we're going to learn that our high court in Massachusetts is not called the Supreme Court. It's actually called the Supreme Judicial Court, the SJC. But we're also going to see our court system. There are lower courts that are in place. Well, all the lower courts were all created by law, as I said. Oh, but checks and balances. How does one become a judge in Massachusetts? Well, they have to get appointed by the governor. But the governor's council also has a say. In order for the government to put a judge in office, he has to get a majority vote by the executive council. Checks and balances. The governor cannot get her man or woman onto the court unless the governor's council agrees. Oh, so what does this mean? Judges are not elected. The people have no say. Well, what happens if the people don't like what the judges are doing? Can the people remove them? The answer is no. They get life tenure. John Adams, being an attorney, the most famous attorney in Massachusetts in his lifetime, became most famous for representing the 9 soldiers involved in the Boston Massacre. his own cousin Samuel Adams wanted all of those soldiers to hang for murder. But that's not the facts of the case. John Adams was concerned about justice. Because if judges have to bow to mob rule, no one will get justice. So our judges get life tenure to free them from popularity contests, to ensure that they ultimately will do right by the law. But does that mean judges are all powerful? No. Judges can be impeached. They can be impeached. They can be investigated by the legislature, and if there's a supermajority, they can be removed.
Checks and balances.
Now, to make sure there's no spillover, our Constitution also denies people from holding multiple positions. You cannot simultaneously be the lieutenant governor and a judge on one of the appeals courts. You cannot simultaneously be Secretary of the State and Speaker of the House of Representatives. That is strictly prohibited. You serve one office. And by the way, the moment you decide you're going to run for another office, you cannot simultaneously run for re-election in the office you're in, just in case.
You lose that other election. Why?
Simple. If one person could hold multiple offices, that could result in corruption and tyranny. The very ideas that our Constitution was created to prevent. Questions?
Let's wrap this up quick so that way we can do our homework
now that we got the majority of the class here. So today, obviously, our government is very different than what it was when the Constitution went into effect in 1780.
Why? Well, times change. Times change. Our state government is today what it has been made to be over the 246 years since the Constitution went into effect. But the basic design is still the same.
We have our general court. The size of it has shrunk over time, but we still have House of Representatives, we still have Senate. We still have our executive officers. The method of them getting to office has changed. But we still have a governor, a lieutenant's governor, a governor's council, secretary of state, secretary of the treasury, etc., whose job is to enforce the laws made by the general court. We still have our court system. Granted, we have way more courts than we had back then, but again, if you feel you're being wrongly accused of a crime, you can go into court and you can get justice. But the primary reason why we still operate under the original Constitution is because John Adams realized, he had enough foresight to realize that times will change. So if he was to create a document in which the frame of government would have to stay the same in 1780, in 2026, he knew it would not work. So he made a process that allowed for evolution. Allowed the Constitution to roll with the times, if you will. Amendments. Unlike the U.S. Constitution, which is next to impossible to amend, Again, keep in mind, the U.S. Constitution has only been amended 27 times, and 10 of them were within the first 2 years of the new government operating. That was the Bill of Rights. You got them all at one time. Our Constitution, which is older, has been amended 120 times.
And some of those amendments are big, some of them are small.
Again, if you followed some of the clickable links on the body of rights, or the part of the first, and you can see, like, for instance, if there was a specific reference to just man, you know, it was amended to include man and women, things like that. Some were small.
Governor's terms have been amended twice.
Originally, a governor ran for election, served for 1 year. Well, then it became 2 years. Then it was amended again, became 4 years, where it is now.
But there's also been big amendments. And out of the 120,
the one that I've talked about already, and I'm going to continue to refer to, and this is the only one I really want you to understand, is Article 48.
Article 48 gives the people the power to create ballot questions.
We're going to have a whole slew of them if you vote in 2026. I think there's already been like 10 approved, and there might be a couple more coming. By putting this article in, this amendment in, the general court conceded that the people have a right to suggest law. But of course, here's the catch. Just because we suggest law doesn't mean the Beacon Hill actually does what we want. Case in point, 2024, 72% of voters voted for an audit of our legislature. 72%. And our Democratic Senate President and our Democratic House Speaker refuse to allow the auditor's office to do what the Constitution says she's supposed to do. Audit the books. There is no other state in the United States where our legislature does not have to have full disclosure. Everything they do has to be a public record. It applies to the towns. Heck, I had one of my emails get hit 2 weeks ago as a Freedom of Information request. Anything we do can become public knowledge at the town level, but not in our state legislature. 72% people said, yeah, this is not a partisan issue. Democrats, Republicans, independents, we wanted to know what our legislature is spending our money on. Why are we $128 billion in debt? Why did our budget double? Where's the money going? They don't disclose it.
So that is probably the most pressing issue in our state today. And we're not getting any closer to resolution.
But again, going back to this, I'm not going to require you to know it because we're going to talk about the different ballot questions and how it works. But if you do have the time, give it a read. All right, so if it can change, how does one amend the Constitution?
Well, remember, our Constitution was voted on by the people. Thus, it can be altered by the vote of the people.
There are three different ways. The first, the legislature, the general court, can propose an amendment. I call it the legislative amendment because it comes from the legislature. go. Starts off like a normal bill. So they put it on the forms, everything looks like it's a normal bill, and it has to go through, as we're going to cover when we get to the legislative branch, how a bill becomes a law. Meaning, it has to be passed by both chambers. But here's the catch. Unlike a normal law, an amendment has to pass both the House and the Senate by a two-thirds vote. A supermajority. But here's the catch. Our legislative sessions are two-year terms. Every 2 years, we have another general court. In order to amend the Constitution, the proposal must be approved in one session. But then it must wait till the next two-year period begins. So 2026, let's say they approve the proposal of amendment. It has to sit and wait until the next session, which is going to begin in 2027. And then at some point between 2027 and 2029, they have to vote on it again. Now, the intention is that the people may get angry at our legislatures and we'll vote them out and we'll put new people in there. But the reality is in Massachusetts, as voters, and I'm including myself in this, we're all dumb. We keep putting the same people back into office expecting different results. So chances are the vast majority of the new general court are going to be the same people that were in it, you know, the original time. But we're still not done. So, this could be a four-year process. If the general court votes on it again, it then has to go to the Secretary of State. Because the Secretary of State is going to make a ballot question. For the next election. And a majority of people must approve. So again, we'll use hypothetical dates. Let's say it passes in 2026. Then they have up till 2029 to vote on it again. And then, at the earliest, it's not going on the ballot to the 2030 election. It could take up to 6 years maximum for an amendment to be approved. Why? Why not make it quick? Why not make it easy? Why not make it one and done? Simple question. The decision that you make in your life, are the best decisions you make the ones that you just react and just do? man, I still had a little bit of hunger, and I saw that big piece of cake. The smart thing would be like, well, if I wait 10 minutes, all the food will get down there, and I'll probably be full. But in the moment, oh, I'm going to have some cake. But if I only have a little bit, there's only going to be a little bit left. So I'm just going to eat the whole goddamn thing. Because why just leave a little piece of cake for tomorrow? And then about 20 minutes later, just sitting there like, oh, God, what did I do to myself? This is commonly referred to as a cooling off period. Because the most significant thing that a government can do is to amend its constitution. Because you are literally changing how the government operates. So you want to make sure that, not meaning to be cliche, but this is a slow roll. To give more opportunity for more people to look about at it, to think about it, and possibly say, you know, it's not a good idea. We are the only state in the country that does it this way. Which means all of those 120 amendments involve significant contemplation. And by the way, there have been hundreds of proposals to amend our Constitution over the 240-odd 6 years. And the vast majority of them have failed. Question. Right? The second way,
I lost the eraser.
Is through an initiative amendment. This was created in the 48th Amendment. An initiative amendment doesn't come from the legislature, it actually comes from the people. All it takes is a petition signed by 10 people. That's it. 10, well, I have to be specific. 10 registered voters registered to vote in Massachusetts. If you can get a petition with 10 signatures, you can then begin moving the process forward. The initial petition is sent to the Secretary of State's office, who then reviews it. Got to make sure that the petition is legal. You can't amend the Constitution to basically say that anyone who serves in the general court is guilty of treason, so they should be executed. You know, the Secretary of State, while he may agree that some might need it, would never allow that to happen. But if okay, he then allows the group responsible for the petition to go out and collect signatures. And by the way, last year, there were lots of groups doing signature drives. So if you went to the grocery store, you know, there might have been someone set up on a table outside saying, will you sign this? Some of the ones I saw, there was a group that was trying to get us to have voter ID in Massachusetts. There was to get rid of the MBTA Communities Act. There was a whole bunch of at one point, I think the Secretary of State's office authorized like 40. But of those 40, most of them didn't make the required threshold. They have to then get 75 certified signatures. 75,000. Sorry, 75,000. So meaning, if you go sign the petition, your signature must match what your signature is on your voter card in your town hall. If it does not match and the address is wrong, they don't count that signature. By the way, to get even on the ballot, to run, you have to collect signatures. My favorite story, I'll talk about it when we talk about running for elections, is that my wife signed my papers one year, and the signature that she put down was very different than when we first moved into town back in 1995, 20 years before. So our town clerk actually did not certify my wife's own signature. I go to her, I'm like, Laura, what the hell? It's my wife. Doesn't match. You could have wrote it.
So is that like if your signatures don't match?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, sometimes I make mine up. So like if I have, like the one that I have on
my license has to match. Not your license. Well, actually, did you sign up to vote through your license?
Yeah.
Yeah, then it has to match that, yeah. So if you, when you were young and you got your license, you know, made something somewhat fancy and then you go sign like the signature card like that, it's not gonna count. All right. So if, oh, by the way, the rule of thumb when collecting signatures, you always try to get twice as much as you need. Because you have to assume most people are passive aggressive. You know, they're not going to say, well, F you, I'm not going to sign your petition. They may just scribble something on there. But that's not easy to do, I'll tell you that much. All right, so if this occurs, it then goes to the general court. The general court must vote by a majority to make it a ballot question. Now, FYI, under Article 48, the general court must take action on this. They either have to vote for it or they have to vote against it. They can't just do nothing. Oh, and by the way, even if the general court says no, the original group will then get more time and they can go out and collect another 12,000 additional signatures and force it on the ballot. Five. Next election. Ballot question. Last but not least, two votes in general court. By the way, this is two successive, so this could be up to a 4-year period. But it doesn't even require a majority. It only takes 25% vote. So the first general court that receives the results. All right, so let's think. This can all happen in a two-year process. So again, let's give us our hypothetical timeline. Let's say we wanted to get the petition drive going in 2024. This could get on the ballot by 2026. Then the new court comes in, general court comes in 2027. Then there's another re-election in 2030. So this could probably take, you know, potentially up to 2033 before it's approved. And then if it's approved, the Secretary of State declares the amendment is created. Yes?
Is this the case for all of them? Ballot questions are this year, like for the tips on waitresses and stuff? Like
we're not doing amendments. I don't think any of the ballot questions are amendments.
Okay.
Those are just regular ballot. We'll talk about regular ballot questions when we do elections. I just wanted to get the Constitution stuff done.
I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, gotcha. It's similar, but it's just more complicated, more steps. All right, questions?
Only two amendments have been passed this way. All the others have been passed the legislative way. Last but not least,
going back to the way the Constitution was created in the first place. Our Constitution provides that if the towns are so upset by what our government is doing, the towns, town meetings, city councils, have the authority to call for a constitutional convention. But it requires a majority of towns to do it. If the majority of towns vote on an article in town meeting saying we need a constitutional convention, the general court must call for the convention. And interestingly enough, while it hasn't happened in over 100 years, there have been 3 calls for constitutional conventions. The first convention was called in 1820, and it's responsible for the first 9 amendments to our Constitution. FYI, there actually were 14 that were proposed, but 5 of them were rejected by the convention. Then there was a second one in 1853. There were 8 proposals, but all of them were rejected. The people in the towns wanted a constitutional convention, but once the delegates showed up, they couldn't come to consensus on the issues that the people were upset about.
So they all failed. I think one came close. One came with like 40% vote.
And the last is the one that gave us Article 48. This occurred in the midst of World War I. Referendum and initiative. Now here's the funny thing. Once the convention votes on it, it has to go to the general court. And it requires a 2/3 vote by the general court. But it took 12 votes. They voted 12 times. And eventually, on the 12th vote, the general court conceded to the will of the people
and gave us this.
Which, again, something I want you to take a look at.
Questions.
The last important thing, how does our Constitution end?
Well,
the last section of the Constitution took a page out of the process that resulted in the creation of the Body of Liberties in 1641. Our Constitution concludes with a requirement that the entire Constitution be resubmitted to the people. But John Adams put a 15-year cooling period in there. So in 1795, the voters in town meeting were supposed to gather again and review the entire Constitution, to review all of the records on how the government under the Constitution was working. If 2/3 of the voters in town meeting, in all of the town meetings across the state, voted, they could basically repeat the process of 1779. In other words, there would be calling of a new constitutional convention, and then start all over again, make a new government. Now, here's the interesting thing. A majority of voters voted to scrap our Constitution and go back to the well. But a majority is not a 2/3 majority. Since then, we have the power to do that again, by the way, but it would require an amendment. But there has not been even a petition to amend the Constitution to give the people a chance to redraft our Constitution. And there has been no proposal out of the General Court to scrap our Constitution. So it looks like throughout your lives, the lives of your kids, your grandkids, chances are they're going to be operating on the same frame of government that was created by John Adams back in 1780. Questions? All right, let's do homework.
Right, let's do this. Noom.
You all have your homework, right? All right. According to the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, what's the purpose of government?
Protect the people, create
prosperity. Say it loud, say it proud.
Protect the people, create fair laws, keep the country safe, and make sure everyone has the opportunity to live freely and safely. It's meant to serve the people and work for the good of the society as a whole.
How about that? Anyone disagree? Pretty good deal, right? The whole purpose of government is to create a nice place where we all can do our own thing. Safe, peaceful, make our own decisions for our lives. Good, good. Social contract. I gave you the spoilers last class on what the social contract was, so you shouldn't have had to look it up. How does the preamble reference the social contract? That idea by John Locke, that the government and the body politic are in a contract with one another. Anyone have an answer for this one? I can see everybody has papers. Don't make me start calling on people. I'm going to be a big meanie then. We only got like 12 minutes to get through this. What do you got?
For what? Sorry.
Social contract.
I wrote the social contract is a non-formal contract that citizens of the United States will give up certain freedoms so that social order can be maintained and help promote and better societies.
Okay, I'll buy that, but we're not talking about the United States. We're talking about Massachusetts. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So what type of things in Massachusetts would we be expected to give up in order to live in this great place?
I kind of gave you the answer last class. What's the obligation of the people under government? What are we supposed to do?
Follow the law.
Follow the laws. Not kill our neighbors. Act in a decent way. And what's the benefit we get?
We're protected.
Our lives, our liberty, our property protected. All right, what happens if the government does bad?
We can change it.
Yeah, because who created the Constitution? People did. Us. So if we created it, therefore we can change it. Exactly. All right. Part of the first. I asked for 10 specific rights. Give me a right that we have somewhere from within the first 30 articles of part of the first.
Right to bear arms.
Right to bear arms. Give me another right.
Right to practice religion.
Right to practice religion. By the way, can the government tell you what religion to practice? No, not at all. What's another right? Got freedom of speech. What else we got?
Right to vote.
What else we got?
Right to peacefully assemble.
Right to peacefully assemble. What else do we got?
Trial by jury.
We got trial by jury. What else do we got?
Due process.
We get due process of law. What else do we get?
Life, liberty, and property.
Life, liberty, property. What else do we get? We don't like what the government's doing, we can petition them. Tell them, hey, knock it off. One more. We just got one more.
Education.
Did you catch that? I forgot what article it was. There's actually a clause in there that we actually have a right to get an education. It's actually in our Constitution. By the way, that's one of the reasons why Massachusetts was the first state that created public schools, because our Constitution actually said we had a right to a free and public education. Good. If you had other ones, that's fine. I only wanted 10. Duties. What are some of the things that we the people are supposed to do in exchange for getting all those rights and protections? We have to pay taxes. Oh man, isn't that awful? That whenever I first read that, it's like, oh! What also?
Follow the laws.
We have to follow the laws, because what are the consequences of not following laws, ladies and gentlemen? Yeah, you're going to get punished. Another duty.
Sir.
What?
Jury
of our peers. Well, if we're going to be tried by a jury of our peers, that means we have an obligation to serve in a jury. What else have we got?
Participate in the census.
We have to identify ourselves as being registered people of our society. What else have we got?
Legal court orders.
Court is going to tell you to do something. We must comply. Anything else?
Respect public officials.
Oh. We can't go up and punch our elected officials in the face, even if we're mad at them. We don't necessarily have to respect them as human beings, but we have to respect their office. We have to respect the rights of others. Wow, imagine that. We have to kind of do unto others as we want done to us. Kind of old-fashioned idea. What else?
Follow public safety regulations.
Follow public safety. Follow the law. Exactly. Anything else? Not have a duty to worship God?
the duty of all men, publicly and at stated seasons, to worship the Supreme Being, the great creator and preserver of the universe.
Well, now here's the interesting thing. That doesn't necessarily say you have to go to church. But what that is a recognition of the morality that comes out of religion. That's a way of John Adams telling us, hey, just be decent. You know, don't be a douchebag.
What else?
Defend the Commonwealth if needed.
If we're invaded, you can be drafted. You could be compelled to serve in a militia to defend your neighbors, your home, and your Commonwealth. That's in there, yeah. What else? I think we're at like 7.
One of my favorite ones. We should be pious. What does piety mean? What?
Fearful of who or what? No. God. You should be fearful of God. Because what happens if you're not a good person? What are the consequences? No. You gotta burn!
We have to respect justice.
So you go to court, you're gonna sue somebody. You claim they did damage to you, but you can't prove it, and you lose. Did you get justice?
Yes.
Why?
Because you still had a right to go and like, say that.
As long as you had your due process, as long as you had your day in court, that's justice. Justice is not winning. Justice is being able to walk into the door of the court and have an opportunity. Prove your case.
You're also expected to act in moderation, temperance, be industrious, and frugal. Moderation? Living in moderation, what does that mean?
Yeah, don't be greedy. Don't take everything. Take just enough to get by. Leave some for others.
Temperate?
Does anyone know if you hear the word temperance, what that refers to? Don't be a public drunkard. Don't be an alcoholic. You don't have to be a teetotaler. You know, that's one of the big myths. People claim all the Puritans were teetotalers. No, they drank. They just didn't drink to the point where they got stupidly drunk.
Industrious?
Hate to break it to you. This was a capitalist society. John Adams is telling you, no one's going to pay for your own way. Get off your butt and go work. Contribute to the well-being of the community.
And of course, frugal.
Don't go to Starbucks every day and spend $8 on a mocha frappe latte and all those other fruity drinks. Because there's going to be a point when you're going to need that money. If you spend every dollar you have, it's not right for you to turn around and be like, well, I have no money. What happened to all the money you made? Well, you spent it all. No. Save your money. Be frugal.
Duties. The other one that no one got, and it's another thing that I love, is that we have a duty to return to private life any officer.
John Adams is actually telling us, if you don't like the job your government's doing, unelect them. Don't keep sending the same nitwit back and back and back. Put somebody else in that's going to do a better job. We have a right to retire them.
All right, specific protections, we've touched upon a bunch of those.
You know, due process, You can't, the government can't take your life, your property, without due process of law. You're entitled to a court, a trial by jury, things like that. The last two clauses were actually the last two articles. I just kind of threw them at the end. What's the deal with judicial independence? Well, we covered it today. We don't vote for judges because they don't want judges submitting to mob rule. We have a court system so we can get justice, so they have life tenure. And separation of powers, again, this is how you avoid tyranny. We have separate branches, and again, we talked about that today. Is that hard? Let me take them. I'll collect them. You emailed it to me. Yes, I saw yours last week. If you have yours on computer, make sure it's in my inbox today. All right, so what I'm going to do is we're going to come back. We got our last unit before the second exam. We're going to get into the great and general court. Here's the spoilers. I want to do something like this again, but it's not going to be as lengthy. So go in between now and Thursday, go on to the Constitution, go into part of the second, which is the frame of government, and start making your way through the general court section. All right? Cool. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate you. Enjoy the spring-like weather, yeah.
Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Take care.